Lyon Country, Eager Minds. Martin Luther King's message makes a lot of sense today. For many people, I understand even then. To follow him was almost a recipe to get your head open in the streets, certainly if you're in the south of the United States. It could have gotten you investigated, could have gotten you killed, following Martin Luther King Jr. John Lewis's Case in Point, walking across that bridge, and Selma is now a movie depicting that period of time. For your peers and yourself, how radical was the man, Martin Luther King Jr., and the message he brought?
No, he was certainly seen as a radical in no mean order. Of course, he was, for many, compared to Malcolm X, who was also assassinated. And I think the message of Malcolm X and his kind of were complementary to each other, you know. So Martin Luther King like Marcus Garvey, was one of the prophets, one of the philosophers, you know, on whom we stand as we move forward, and on whom those 400 and all those who heard him in Jamaica, all those who now see Selma, we stand on the foundation of people like Martin Luther King. If we didn't have that, we'd be much worse, you know. And we have the foundation of a philosophy, a way of thinking, an understanding of freedom, you know. But I think we needed and we need to carry the work forward.
In 1965, it was February 21 or thereabouts, that Malcolm X had been assassinated. I suspect at that time you were in the planning of getting Dr. King here. How did that affect you and your peers, that Malcolm X, this firebrand at the time, had been taken down in a hail of bullets?
I think not enough of us knew and understood enough. We were certainly aware of the alternative model of you know, I think given the control of the media by the system, and who, as they did with Muhammad Ali, made out Malcolm X to be a negative figure, a man who was promoting violence and division and what have you, you know. So I think you had to be very forward-thinking to understand the message of Malcolm X. People who saw the movie, people who read his book and begun to investigate further about what he stood for, people also recognize that when he was killed was when he began to, like Martin Luther King, began to take a global vision, talk about worldwide poverty, and then he got dangerous, you know. So I think certainly his work is one that we need to build on too. And I think that, again, was part of the fervent movement, the boiling up, so to speak, of consciousness in the 60s.
A young Christian you are at the time, the message of King, how much did it challenge, as I look on at the picture of Dr. King working the welcoming line at the chapel of which you're a part? How different was his message to the message you were hearing here in Jamaica in terms of the capacity of the church and why the church was really here?
I think we need to reread Dr. King. We need to go back into his books. You know, I don't know how we're going to do that. In the school system, we need to read Marcus Garvey. And one of the things we do in Jamaica and elsewhere is we have this annual thing where we just, you know, hail and then disperse, but they are dead, you know, they are dead and gone. And we are doing our people, our younger people, a great disservice by not, you know, getting out his message and to read his writings and to integrate his teaching. Because the whole teaching, really, of non-violent resistance is extremely important. And you notice that the people of the other color have taken it up. You know, after the Wall Street collapse, the, what they call them, the 1%ers? The 99%ers. Who begun to, the Occupy movement, that's what we're talking about. Even in Hong Kong, those who were against, you know, any sense of removal of their rights because of taking over by China, look at what they did. And they were not violent, you know, and even the movement in the Middle East there, right? The Arab Spring. It's the same notion. So Martin Luther's message of King, it came from Gandhi too, of non-resistant, you know, non-violent resistance. And that is something in Jamaica that I don't think we have really embraced it enough. It was beginning to come up with Ferguson, you know. And I think it's something which we need to pick up again and move with it. You know, really pick up and move with it.
Your challenge, or the challenge to the church here in Jamaica, even from 50 years ago, how do we but sell that perspective of the relieving of our sorrow? Heaven is where we're going, but we can possibly not see what is happening around us with a view to saying 1965 onwards, if you could use that as a marker, Martin Luther King is beginning to look beyond the narrowness of the struggle to say the man deserves a fair wage, the man deserves an opportunity to earn, the woman deserves not to be treated with disrespect. Your Jamaica at the time has a whole set of people in an underclass, a continued seeming perpetual underclass of existence, where possibly in that room, the kingdom is falling to you and your peers. You're being, in a sense, brought into rule. The British are leaving, and the places that they used to occupy are now becoming ours. We inspire Martin Luther King to show him that yes, we too as people of color can run these things, as indeed we are in Jamaica. He leaves here inspired. But it seems even today we have people who look like us, people of color, black people. Because earlier when you spoke about people of color, I'm thinking as to how that plays out in Jamaica. People of color many times mean people of high color, brown people, near white people. Those are the people of color, the minority. People of color in the United States are people here, black people, dark peoples, Indian peoples, not white peoples, the dominant culture. We are the rulers here in our country, and we've been in a significant way for a long time. But the leg up, the equity in our society, we seem to be opening up even wider and wider chasms in terms of where the bottom is, where the top is, where the middle is. And I'm a little disturbed by it. But you've been seeing this for a long time. What say you?
As I said, there's a duality. There are, Jamaica is a country of samples. You know, in our manufacturing, we make very good jerk sauces and, you know, we make very good things. We do well in athletics, you know, we have a sample of a good swimmer, and we have samples of reggae, even though reggae now is mostly a non-Jamaican movement. So we produce different things and we can see the Jamaican genius. But when it comes to the whole country as a collective, saying brand Jamaica, you know, and we are now talking as one. This is how the Chinese government, you know, will say, okay, or Singapore or whatever, that we are positioning our nation to produce X, Y, and Z. We are positioning our nation to do this. Germany, whatever. You know, even France, look how France came out with the whole aspect of the terrorist shooting. You know, everybody came out and said, I am Charlie. You know, what are we as Jamaicans collectively coming out to say? Who we are, what we want to do, right? And so the point I'm making is that I think that in the 60s we began to have the consciousness, hey, we are black, hey, we are beautiful, hey, we need to get somewhere, we need to move forward, you know, we have had some foundation for this. But it's still a struggle, it wasn't going to end in a couple of years. And the struggle continues, but I think we have, in a sense, vacated, many of us have vacated certain aspects of the struggle. You know, I think we still need to call it. You know, there's a lot of corruption happening in Jamaica. Politics is still, as I said, the politics of populism, of distribution of spoils, you know, for a vote, right? Jamaica's a place to do business. We still have too much bureaucracy. You know, when you look at all the systems, I'm not sure I would agree that we run our country. You know, when we look at television, a lot of the imagery we see is foreign. You know, it's the IMF now that is determining our economic, how we run the government, how we run the country. But the IMF says we have to follow it and we have to put it into law. So I am not sure how much we are running our country as people of majority, you know. And I'm not talking about majority versus minority. But what I'm saying is that when you look at the collective of Jamaicans, that the majority of us still have to move from a position of being owned to ownership. And part of that movement means that we have to identify the struggles, keep the struggle before us, resist it nonviolently, you know, and keep resisting and keep fighting. And I think we have to move then, also with that resistance, we have to move towards innovation and what Martin Luther King called the beloved community. That is what he was striving towards, where the black children and the white children could walk the mountain together, the beloved community. We're not a beloved community in Jamaica. You know, we still have the lower class, you know, the middle, the upper, we still have the browning and the white and the different groups. It's not one people. We're not one people. We have JLP, we have PNP, we have uptown, we have downtown. We're not one people. And we're not really governing, we're not owning our country. We're not owning our resources, we're not owning our destiny. And we still have to have that nonviolent struggle. Call it, name it. We need to come out and, you know, and fight for it. And also, as we fight, you know, as we fight to own, to find our place, we know also need to find, to build our collectivism and to build our economy as a people.
I lift my hat to people like yourself. Your act, being a part of a committee that was able to bring easily what I'd call a world leader without a state to our country, speaks to the character of who it is we are as Jamaicans. Nothing is beyond us. Nothing is greater than us. And I guess quite possibly it is with some knowledge that he was a fan of Jamaica. He had been here before. That it dawned on you that we could get him here again. Which, as I look at the picture, you clearly did. I listen to you and I recognize that I'm champing at the bit in terms of what our real possibility is in this country as part of humanity. We have so much to contribute to the world, as so many of our stars, past, present, and future, will do. But still this little bit of paradise, Columbus's fairest isles, eyes I've ever seen, is still a pretty ugly place in terms of the living conditions for all too many. We then ask ourselves, where will the solutions come from? A place near and dear to both of us is the University of the West Indies, of which you're a front runner to me. But then I ask myself, what is it teaching and what can it contribute in terms of its teaching of the kids who now go there and the mature students who now go there? And a community in which you're certainly more firmly placed than myself. As a person who studied divinity and all these kinds of things, the church, where do we look for our leadership as we even go forward? And I so thank you for so much of your time. But just that last question.
I think our leaders have to be people who are innovators and people who can build. Because in the fire analysis, you have the prophets, you have the marchers and the philosophers who need to give us a kind of framework of what we need to do and where we need to go. Even Norman Manley, he spoke about doing the work of helping to bring about self-government to Jamaica, you know, but the next generation was to build, you know, and the ability to build institutions, not just inherit and keep them running, but to build new institutions. To people like Rex Nettleford, who created the, you know, created a genre of culture in Jamaica. We come back to Bob Marley and his creative, innovative work, Louise Bennett, creative, you know. And we need to move over that, as I've said, into our theology, for example. We have created some local theological training institutions, but there's not much writing going on now, you know. Our churches have created a health movement where they have clinics and they have holistic ministries to some extent, you know. But we need to create more institutions, more activities, more models of education that are relevant. We're looking at Jamaica Creole now, our Jamaican language, and the benefit that can be. You know, there are several cutting edges, but we need to build different aspects of our culture and to build financial. Grace Kennedy is a good model of building a financial manufacturing, distributing corporate entity that is now going global. They're working with the farmers. We can look at the whole sandals and other things like that. But we need to replicate that. So we need to get our hands in the soil, get our hands in the oil, as it were. You know, get our hands into IT, into business. There's a man named Glenn Christian who used to go barefoot to school. But, you know, now he has the biggest pharmaceutical distributing company in Jamaica, where he was a postman at one time and where he used to deliver mail, Colgate Palmolive, you know, owns that company, you know. So there are examples of people. I can come back to the word people of color. You know, when you use the word black in Jamaica, people recoil from it. And so, you know what? So people of dark color, then, if you want to put it. People of African descent. Call it. People of African descent. Who have, you know, become innovative and put their hands in together and work and build something in the economy, build something in the church and in different areas. So we have to become builders now, you know, builders of churches that are relevant to our people moving forward. Build industries, build manufacturing, build education that is relevant. New institutions, new movements, new communities, something tangible and practical beyond the aspect of how we think, you know. But at the same time, we still have to work at how we think and work at how we relate, how we feel about ourselves, or, you know, our emotions about ourselves and how we relate to one another. You know, how we think, our feelings about ourselves, and how we relate to one another. You know, we still have to manage that to be able to get down to the nitty-gritty of the innovativeness in our business, our economy, our education, our health, and all of that. You know, a lot of room for innovation. We have had people, you know, there's a guy, a number of people who have written books about Jamaicans who have excelled here and abroad. Many Jamaicans, all walks of life, science and music and any field you take it, Jamaicans have excelled. But most of it is abroad, you know. But we need to excel, and our government, our leaders, and our people in positions of influence need to welcome people from the diaspora. You know, we need to own who we are, you know, and not cut down one another. This red eye, crab in the barrel mentality, that's part of how we need to change our thinking. And, you know, unless we change our thinking to become a collective from individualists, to become owners and innovators from being owned, to see God as a God of black people as well as white people, you know. Have to change all of that and our feelings, and then we'll change how we relate to one another, the beloved community, and then now we become innovators in our own country to take forward that national movement into the economic and practical sphere that will benefit our people as a nation.
I really thank you for your time. I asked you for a little and you gave me a lot. I would like at our ending to say the kinds of strides you've made. What do you now do coming from 1965 to now?
Well, it's a difficult question to answer. I don't like to talk about myself. But I went into the field of psychiatry and was very unhappy with just looking at one aspect of the person, because I felt that looking at one aspect of the person wasn't enough. And because of my faith and strong concern for spiritual liberation, I felt that that needed to be integrated. So I went and did a degree in theology and then developed a whole person approach, both to medicine and to church. You know, so I worked with the churches, especially the Baptist Church, more specifically Bethel Baptist in Harpertree, but, you know, to develop a whole person ministry which integrated medical services, counseling, body, mind, and prayer, spirit, and also social, working in underserved communities, and now dealing with the homeless and so on. So this holistic community-based approach, and with the church as a healing community, this is a movement that has developed in the church. It has also been recognized abroad and has helped to influence a similar movement overseas as well. We're still struggling with it because we still have to have that innovative spirit and the thinking and the reflecting to make it continue. The other thing I've done in the field of psychiatry is to introduce more of the person-centered approach to psychiatry through psychotherapy and counseling. So after I received my training in theology and finished my training in psychiatry, I went to the University Health Center and started a full-time mental health service for students and staff. And then I took a step with the director then at the university of introducing counseling, the counseling service at university for students and staff, right? So that was, again, to personalize it, to deal with it, with the where people would sit down and talk, not just prescribe, but help people to talk about their story and to grow as persons. In the field of psychiatry, I established a teaching of psychotherapy for psychiatrists and also counseling for medical students. So I helped to pioneer that teaching as well. Eventually, because I felt I needed to have more time to work with the churches, I went into private practice, and I've sought for my own practice to make it a, it's now called Whole Person Growth Facility, and my motto is called, and website is called Whole Person Balance. So it's an approach where we help people through healthy lifestyles to balance the whole person, body, mind, spirit, social, spiritual environment. And as we become more balanced, then we release our potential and we also achieve our wellness. So that passion for being and becoming, I try to live it through in my practice. We even talk about, you know, exercise, nutrition, and we even talk about money as well. So helping people to really take charge. Take charge of their lives, take charge of their marriage, take charge of their families, and even where they work.
Yeah. And you spent some time at Yale in addition to the University of the West Indies?
Yeah, that's where I did my degree in theology.
Would that have made you a medical student doing psychiatry?
No, already then I had 2 years training in psychiatry, which I interrupted to do the degree in divinity.
For the record, I've been speaking with
Dr. Anthony Allen, consultant psychiatrist and consultant in wellness and church-based health ministries.
What's your website?
WholePersonBalance.com.
WholePersonBalance.com. Doc, it's been a pleasure speaking with you, and I thank you so much for your time.
It's a great pleasure and inspiration speaking with you, and thanks for the opportunity for this sharing.